Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from September 3rd, 1999.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening or good morning, as the case may be, across this great land of ours. And welcome to another edition of whatever it is we do here. We call it Coast to Coast AM. And it extends from the Tahitian and Hawaiian Islands out west, eastward to the Caribbean, the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north all the way to the pole, and worldwide on the Internet. Thank you, Broadcast.com, for distribution, and, of course, the Intel Corporation for the codec that allows this G2 program that means you can go up to my website, download the G2 program. It is free. Not much in this world is free. That is, install into thy computer, come back up, click on streaming video, and here I will be doing the program in some less than fully animated form. I mean, a talk show after all. All right, let's look around the world and see what's going on first. In Argentina, an airliner carrying at least 90 people crashed on takeoff tonight, slamming into a nearby golf course, catching fire, and reportedly killing, they think now, about 69 people. It was a Boeing 737, an airplane I have frequently flown on. I'm sure many of you have, too. Hurricane Dennis, which skirted the North Carolina coast, and then but took a trajectory toward the northeast and then more east, appears to have changed its mind, and though somewhat lesser with regard to wind speed, is now moving west, directly west, back toward North Carolina. That's pretty odd. I guess it has occurred before, but I thought there was a great big high-pressure system that, once it took hold, was going to push Dennis way out to sea and keep it going. But instead, it stopped, and now it's moving back toward the coast. So look out in North Carolina. Here, out west, we have wildfires burning up all over the place. And I've got to tell you, here where I live, in the Little Pahrump Valley, it is so hazy from the fires in the San Bernardino Mountains, just over the hill, which are only now, I understand, about 10% contained. It is so hazy you can't see the mountain. In fact, you cannot see the reflected light from Las Vegas anymore, which is really something. So the wildfires out here are not good. FBI Director Louis Freeh is seeking an independent investigation into the Waco, Texas case. He wants to know why it took the agency 6 years to acknowledge using incendiary tear gas canisters to end the Branch Davidian siege. This is really hotter news than you think. There are subpoenas flying like crazy. And in fact, right now, Attorney General Janet Reno is being warned that some inside the Justice Department may have withheld evidence from her about the fiery end of the standoff at Waco, Texas. Well, oh, what a surprise. The only surprise to me is that it took this long to get out, finally get out. As far as I was concerned, and I said then, and I repeat now, Waco was government-sanctioned murder. That's my opinion, and it was then, and it remains that now. I recall so well covering the entire thing. I recall the FBI standing there and saying they would basically wait until hell froze over, if necessary, so that it would not end with violence. And then everything changed. And then women and children were burned alive. Now, some policy obviously changed at some point. Did Janet Reno know about it? Kind of hard to say. She came in late. You've got to acknowledge it possible they did not tell her everything, and there was some on-the-spot action that she was not aware of. But this whole thing is about to blow up big time. So we'll see. By the way, we've just had a big solar flare. It occurred Saturday. It was actually a CME. And it was a pretty big one, too. It occurred crossing the sun's southern hemisphere. And it should put on quite a light show. Should be putting on quite a light show. Here's somebody who writes a kind of an interesting email. Today, I've witnessed a half dozen birds, that's a half dozen, folks, hit my sliding glass door. It is 3 o'clock in the afternoon as I write this, and in 4 hours' time, 6 birds have run into my window. This rarely happens in the same month, much less the same day, much less 6 times today. I tell you all this because Jim Berkland was on the Sightings radio program last October, said that hundreds of passenger pigeons have been lost in the east. Yes, I recall that well. Said the Earth's magnetic field had undergone some sort of haywire action, and this may be occurring again right now. You remember we talked a little bit about transplant of heads? Well, I've got a story here that will rock you back on your heels. They're about to begin transplanting heads. Here we go. A leading brain surgeon has unveiled plans to perform the first human head transplant. The operation, already carried out successfully on dogs and monkeys, would initially cost about £800. That's English. Among those who could benefit are quadriplegics with conditions similar to that of Christopher Reeve, the Superman actor who was paralyzed after a fall from a horse. Tragic. The operation may also appeal to rich people with terminal illnesses. The technique for transplanting heads was proven in principle with small mammals in the early 1990s. However, it was abandoned when scientists realized the extra time needed to connect larger human arteries and muscles would deprive the brain of oxygen and cause tissue damage. Last week, it was claimed this obstacle has finally been overcome. Robert J. White, an American neurosurgeon, one I have interviewed, by the way, says now he has developed a blood cooling system that means a living head could be disconnected from its blood supply for up to an hour without ill effect. White and his team, based at Case Western Reserve University in Ohio, claim they've already practiced the technique on corpses retained for medical research at the American hospital where he works. The White machine cools the brain from 37 degrees centigrade to 10 degrees centigrade. This slows the metabolism and allows plenty of time to reconnect a head to its new body. All we're waiting for now, said Dr. White, is the money and the patience. So they are now ready to transplant a head. The downside? Well, there'd be no connection of the neural system to the rest of the body, so you would be, in essence, paralyzed. However, it represents the closest thing that we now have to immortality. There are those who would say, who would want to live that way? Others would suggest that, I guess, if you believe there is nothing that comes in the hereafter, then it is better to be here than after, even in that condition. How about you? Who would you think would be an appropriate candidate, first candidate for a head transplant? Anybody out there? All right, I've got a lot more, but open lines for the balance of this program. I guess I ought to get Dr. White on again, huh? What do you think? they're really going to do it. I had an awful lot of photographs. When I had Dr. White on, we had actual photographs of monkey heads that he had transplanted. Now, he did that, and the monkeys remained alert, responsive in every way, for the time they had their... Well, the new heads went to the new bodies, terrible as that may sound. It was quite an interview. He's a very controversial fellow, and I guess he's going to go ahead and do it. Would you do that? First-time caller line, you are on the air. Good morning. Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Is that our Bill?
Yes, it is.
Huh?
Hello?
Is this our Bill?
I've answered that twice. Now, if I have to answer that again, I got to go.
Hey, Art.
Hey. West of the Rockies, call toll-free 1-800-618-8255.
You would like to have...
All right, well... Wildcard line, you're on here. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Hello there.
This is Rocky in Woodbury.
Rocky in Woodbury.
Woodbury, Minnesota. Sorry about that.
Oh, okay.
Listening to you on 1500 KSTP Talk Radio.
Yes, sir.
I thought I'd call and let everybody know a couple of interesting Y2K things as I sit here in the dark.
In the dark.
After forgetting to pay my electric bill.
Uh-huh. Well, now, you're a perfect person to talk to. You forgot to pay your electric bill, so you're actually in the dark.
Yes, sir.
And it's kind of like a big casket, isn't it?
Oh, a little bit, except I do have this one candle here.
You have a candle, and your phone works.
Right.
But that's about it.
That's about it. No, fortunately, we didn't have much food in the fridge.
I see. I guess in this case, it's good.
Well, at this point, yeah, there's a few dry things around to eat, you know, and that's okay.
Hmm.
So, I called to say, sir, is that my bank has put a generator the size of about a half of a semi-trailer hooked up directly to the main gas pipe outside. That would be the St. Paul Postal Credit Union.
Really?
Yes, sir.
And did you ask them about it?
I have not.
Why don't you do that? Why don't you go in and just ask the manager, hey, what's the generator for?
That's really what I was wondering, and I would like to do that, and I think I will. I'm going there tomorrow morning anyway.
All right. Well, that's right. You probably got to get some money out to go pay your electric bill.
Yes, sir.
Do me a favor and call me back and let me know what they say.
I will do that, and I have one other thing.
Sure.
The Keister and Keister Insurance Agency just sent me a letter last week saying that they will not be responsible for any lapses nor any quote-unquote act of God things that might happen from any Y2K-related incident.
Well, now, I don't know how... I understand they call it an act of God. But Y2K is an act of man.
Indeed.
So, somebody may have to thrash that one out in court. Meanwhile, it sounds like they're telling you to watch your keister.
They are.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
Turn your radio off.
Okie dokie.
Number one.
All right.
Good.
Cool. Is this Art?
Yes.
Hi. My name's Sean. I'm calling from Highland Springs, Virginia, right outside of Richmond.
Yes, Sean.
And when... a couple years ago, I went to this place called Camp Henrico, and it was this Christian camp, and it was really cool. And me and my friends were walking back to our cabin, and we saw, like, this UFO, and it was like a triangle shape.
Yeah.
So we sat there, and we stared at it, and it just seemed like 2 minutes. And then we were on our way back, and, like, we were missing, like, a day, like, a whole day.
Whole day.
It was just creepy.
And how did the officials at this Christian camp react when you got back a day late?
They were just, like, really worried, and they had called our mom, like...
Yes, and when you told them that you had sighted a triangular UFO...
They were like, nah, you probably just got lost in the woods or something.
Lost in the woods.
They were just like, they wouldn't...
I wouldn't think they'd buy into that story right away.
Yep.
All right, thank you. And if they did buy into it, they would say, 'Twas the devil's work. That's why we have camps like this. People like you coming to them. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. No, you're not. First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning. Yes, turn your radio off, please. You got to turn your radio off, folks, or I can't talk to you. Wildcard line, you're on the air.
Yeah, this is Dan in Idaho Falls.
Hello, Dan.
I have an update on the supernova. President Clinton has finally taken me seriously, and he's attending a long briefing, several days long, right now.
Taking you seriously?
Pardon?
You talked to the president?
He's attending a briefing by...
How did you get your information to the president?
By mail.
By mail? You wrote him a Mr. President letter?
Well, sort of.
Uh-huh.
Sort of like that. I've given him two solutions.
Has he responded to you?
No.
No. Then how do you know that he's reacting to you?
He's attending my briefing right now.
Where is your briefing?
It's at a undisclosed location.
So the president has, you mean he's actually had to sneak away to listen to what you've had to say?
Yes, he was on vacation, and now he's snuck away from that.
You don't think we believe that, do you? I mean,
I've given
him, look, I'll tell you what. Do something for me.
Yeah?
Put him on the phone.
I'm not doing the briefing.
Well, you just said it was your briefing.
It's my information that he's being briefed on, but I'm not doing the briefing.
I see. So you can't put him on the phone?
No, he's not here.
How about Hillary? Can you put on Hillary?
No, I don't think so.
No Hillary. All right, well, I don't know. This gentleman talks about a supernova and that he thinks our sun is going to go a supernova and says the president is now attending his secret briefing. Anybody know where the president is right now? He's not at a briefing, is he? A secret briefing? Stay right there, and we'll be right back. From the high desert, open lines, this is Coast to Coast AM.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 3rd of September, 1999.
Now's that harmony or what? That, of course, is ABBA. By the way, the caller I had toward the bottom of the hour, I'm informed by my board operator in Oregon, is from the Galactic Federation. Guess he called Hilly. I didn't get that much. He wouldn't put the president on, so I was out of there. Dr. Robert J. White, if you're out there. We should get together again. The last time I interviewed Dr. White, he affirmed all of the experimentation he did with monkeys with regard to head transplants, but he thought it would be years until he would get to a human being. But here in this August 29th story from the London Sunday Times, it looks like he's just about ready to go, unless they misquoted him terribly, and I can't imagine that. Well, of course, they do get things wrong, but this would be awfully wrong. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
Turn your radio off, please.
Okay.
Yes, good.
Okay, I'm Jeanette.
Hi, Jeanette.
I'm calling from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Okay.
And I have something weird, and I don't know how to explain it.
You've come to the right place.
I had someone with me, so we're a bit confused.
All right.
Cincinnati... I guess in elevation from sea level, I don't know, you know, how high it is.
Mm-hmm.
But tonight, we could not see the moon until 11:45.
Well, I'm not sure whether that's normal or abnormal.
I've never not been a, I mean, it's a half moon. It's huge.
Yeah.
And
huge,
we,
yeah.
We couldn't see it.
You think that's something. You ought to see it out here, where we've got all this smoke from these terrible wildfires going on.
Right.
It comes up blood red.
Well, it's a weird shade of yellow tonight, but it we couldn't see it at all.
Well, the moon does come up at different times, you know.
Right, but I've never known it to not be visible until midnight.
I have.
Okay.
I mean, it's like sometimes, haven't you ever gone out in the middle of the day at noon and seen the moon?
Right.
So it depends. That's not unusual.
Okay.
It's not unusual, but it is nice that you noticed.
Well, we enjoy your show.
Thank you very much.
And it was nice talking to
you. Okay, take care. Yes. If more people looked up, we'd have a whole lot more UFO sightings. But as a general practice during the day, people don't look up. I mean, they go about their business. When you're driving, think about it. Do you look up? No. No, you don't. You look at the car in front of you. Or you observe traffic for your own safety. You don't look up, right? Even when you're outside in your car. And how many people walk these days? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning, Art. This is Ron in Redding, California.
Yes, sir.
The last time we talked was about 15 years ago. You had one radio station. How many you got now? 400?
Almost 500.
Oh, Christ. Yes, that's wonderful to hear that. Listen, I keep asking people, what is the Redding Ripple? And nobody seems to know, and I live in Redding and have for 5 years, and nobody seems to know what it is.
You don't know what the Redding Ripple is?
No, I even asked my friend Tony, and he's very, he's probably listening to you. He's one of your biggest fans. And,
you know, let me put it this way to you. There are some things that you're better off, I guess, not knowing.
Maybe I am. There's been some mysterious disappearances around here.
That's it.
Oh. Anyway, Art, it's good to talk to you again. We'll
All
have
right.
to talk more often in 15 years.
Yeah. Try and make it more frequently.
Okay, Art. Good night.
Good night. Yeah, you don't want to know about the Ripple. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Art. How you doing?
All right.
Seems like some people are reaching out to report some strange things.
Well, that's we're the home of strange.
I am, too. I'm sitting here looking at the moon right now. I'm a Dennis survivor, by the way.
You're a what survivor?
The Hurricane Dennis.
Oh, are you in North Carolina?
Yeah.
Where?
Well, I'm in Wilmington, about 50 miles from the...
Wilmington. Well, right now, it looks like the damn thing is moving back.
Yeah, if that low front came through, I mean, that pressure coming out of Canada came through and grabbed it.
I don't quite understand what occurred, because the weather guys on the Weather Channel were saying there is this magungus gigantic high coming down, and it's going to push the hurricane straight out east.
Yeah, it'll go east, but I've seen them circle around there. I've seen them go out there and play around for 5 or 6 days and come right back in. There's something about the Cape Fear River that sucks these things in, and it was very rare that this one didn't come right up the Cape Fear River.
Well, it may yet.
Well, I appreciate talking to you. And
all right, hang in there and keep your eyes on the Weather Channel. Although, they didn't get it right. I mean, they were talking about how many computer models they had that said that it was going to go north and east and more easterly. And then once it began that track, why, it would go way off to the east. And then the next time I look at the Weather Channel, the damn thing is moving back west again, slowly. I don't know. Does not seem like we've perfected this weather forecasting stuff yet, does it? A wild card line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. Hi, I'm first time caller. I'm Jean from Moline, Illinois.
Welcome.
And just wanted to say that earlier this afternoon, I looked up in the sky and there were these two X's up there.
Mm-hmm.
East, southeast of where I live. We're right on the Mississippi River here.
Chemtrails.
Possible. I don't know. But it was weird because I never see chemtrails that look like that.
Just, well, the tip-off between a chemtrail and a contrail is that a chemtrail will begin with the X, as you just talked about.
There's two of them right next to each other.
Yeah, and that's right. And then it will kind of coalesce into a light cloud bank, or what looks like a light cloud bank over time.
Mm-hmm.
Did that happen?
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I just noticed that, and if there's anyone in our area, in the Rock Island, Moline, Illinois area.
Can I ask you a question?
Right.
Does your liver feel any smaller right now?
Not yet. I've been inside, though.
I see.
My grandson, I'm busy sitting and keeping him inside away from that crap.
Uh-huh.
But it's very nice to speak to you. It's the first time. I'll try again.
All right, you do that. You. Watch your liver.
Yes, sir.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Who's this?
Well, who do you think it is?
Oh, is this Art?
Of course.
All right. Hey, Art. Hey, I got just a couple things, man. The other night, Friday the 27th.
Yeah.
They were supposed to have a thing on. You had a guest on that was supposed to be. He had some breaking news.
Well.
And they blacked it out on our radio. I'm calling from Duluth, Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
At WEBC.
Right.
And they blacked it out, and I was just, and you know, I, throughout the whole.
How did they black it out?
Well, they just didn't have nothing on, but during commercials, you know, it came on, you know, WEBC, you know, and it
in other words,
the weather report.
In other words,
that was it.
All right, the commercials came on, but the main content of the show did not.
Nothing.
All right, that's automation.
Uh-huh.
In other words, somehow the automation messed up, and it did everything backwards.
Oh.
In other words, it played all the commercials and the news, but not the program.
Right, yeah, but you know, you had some input. You had a guest on that was going to give some.
Either that, or it was the Trilateral Commission.
Well, yeah, is that the government? I don't know.
I mean, which would you be more likely to believe?
Well, it was the government. They didn't want us to hear.
Uh huh. So you'd more likely believe that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the call. This is a problem that we have. Because of the type of material that I deal with, when a radio station goes off the air for maintenance, or they have a technical difficulty, my listeners are somewhat less than tolerant because they always conclude that a government agency is responsible. And they might be. Who knows? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Nice to finally talk to you.
And you, where are you?
I'm calling from Stockton, California. I'm listening to you on 1280 AM.
Yes, sir.
KJAX. Two things for you, Art. I don't know if you're still talking to Sean David Morton. I was wondering when he's coming on your show.
As soon as we can get him.
And another thing, I was listening to you in Bakersfield probably about 7 months ago, Art, and the weirdest thing happened.
What?
I was doing a paper route early in the morning. You happened to be talking about them green flashes that people had been seeing in night skies. Well, this was in Bakersfield, Art, and I was kind of up in the foothills above the city.
Mm-hmm.
Weirdest thing happens, I see this humongous flash green light, and it was so close to me, Art, that I actually braced myself for something that was about to hit.
It was several hundred feet
up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
It had to have landed, I don't know, miles, maybe, you know, 15 miles at the most. I don't know what the hell it was, Art.
Landed or crashed?
I don't know if it landed, crashed, Art. I didn't hear anything, but my body actually braced for some type of an explosion. You know when your body does that?
Of course.
Scared the hell out of me, Art. I don't know what the hell it was, but it had a green tail, and it was a green fireball.
Well, if you will listen carefully, I've got a guest coming on who may have your answers. All right?
Great, Art.
All right. John T. Nordberg. Is that right? Is his middle initial T? Yeah. Thomas. John Thomas Nordberg. Do you ever notice most serial killers have three names? John Wayne Gacy? I'm not saying Mr. Nordberg is a serial killer. I'm just somehow noting that they all have three names. Why is that? Does anybody out there know why that is? Why would serial killers always have three names? West of the Wildcard Line, rather. You're on the air.
Hello, Art.
Hi.
Did you ever get a chance to read the article about that quake survivor in Turkey that saw that fireball coming at him?
I did.
And you know what it reminds me of? Remember when that island, I think it was a year, maybe 2 years ago, that tsunami hit And a lot of the people on that island were saying that and actually they did find some of the victims burned, and a lot of the people there said they actually saw walls of fire coming at them. I just, any ideas on that?
No, but again, my guest coming up, I believe, does.
Okay.
All right.
I'll be waiting for him.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. On the international line, you are on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, hi. Is it Art Belshew?
Yes, it is. Where are you?
I'm calling from Vancouver, British Columbia.
Vancouver. All right.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead. You're on the air. Sir?
Yeah, hi. This is Sunny calling from Vancouver.
Right.
I was wondering, like, you had this guest on, this caller on last week from Massachusetts, I think from Boston.
Yes.
And he said something, and then you put on some commercials. I was wondering, like, do you have any word on that?
No. No, no. No. He would like to be a guest, is what he wanted, if that answers your question. And, I'm not sure that he's really qualified to be a guest. In other words, he's not really an expert in anything. He's a sightless man, and I've been talking to him for some time, and that's what he wanted, to be a guest.
Okay, that's what I was... Lots of contrails here in Vancouver, actually.
Really?
Yeah, like in the past few weeks.
Now, contrail is a contrail. Are these different than normal contrails?
Well... Sometimes they are like sort of zigzag or in circles, like doing something during the morning, like early morning.
Yes, I took a. Listen on the air. I tell you what, I took a photograph not long ago of a contrail that was really bizarre. It was like little O-rings, like little puffs of something or another. And what I think it is some new type of propulsion system. And here's an article that might back that up. All right? From the deserts of California to the panhandle of Texas, civilian observers have reported intriguing hints that the Pentagon may be testing one or more super secret aircraft, including perhaps one with a revolutionary form of propulsion. They say they have photographed contrails shaped like donuts. Ta-da! Actually, the quote is, donuts on a rope. Seen delta-shaped aircraft with unusual lights and heard engines that pulse with enough force to make walls quiver and sleepers awake. There is speculation the craft may include next-generation spy planes, either manned or unmanned, capable of flying several times speed of sound, matching or exceeding the fastest planes to date. But what caught my eye was contrails shaped like donuts on a rope. And by the way, that's from Newsday. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art Bell. This is Andy from Clackamas, Oregon.
And what's new, Andy?
You know how you're saying they were changing different heads to different bodies?
Yes.
Does that mean that our soul is in the mind?
Well, they're not going to know that, Andy, until they...
I thought you said they did something like
transfer
that.
Transfer ahead. Well, they did it with monkeys, Andy, not people. And there are many who would argue that monkeys don't have a soul. Now, when we get around to human beings, we'll find out, I guess. But you know what? How do I know I've got a soul? Now, there's something to ponder. How do I know that I've got a soul? And if they were to sever my head and attach it to another's body, and other than the fact that I could not move my limbs, I felt exactly the same, how would I know whether I had lost my soul? Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Yes.
Hey, I know you're a radio guy. This is Mike in Tucson, KNST.
Yes, Mike.
On your own time, who do you listen to?
I listen to a lot of people. I listen to Ray Taliaferro sometimes up in San Francisco. When I'm able to, I listen to Phil Henry, who's a crazy man in Los Angeles. I listen to a whole bunch of different people. I
haven't heard of those two guys, but...
No?
No. I was just curious who you, if you listen to Liddy or Limbaugh or...
Oh, I see. Yeah, I will listen occasionally to Rush, not as much as I used to. And I haven't heard Gordon Liddy in a long, long time. How's he doing?
Oh, he's all right. I listen to him a couple times a week.
Well, there's your answer. Phil Henry is a very interesting guy. He will occasionally, actually very recently, he'll parody me and my program. And actually, Phil does an incredible job. He'll even interview people who are not exactly people. And if you're not forewarned about what he does, there is no way in the world that you would believe that what you're hearing is not the real McCoy. It's kind of hard to explain unless you've heard him, and one of these days, pretty soon, you may. From the high deserts, I'm Art Bell, John T. Nordberg, coming up next.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Presents Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from September 3rd, 1999.
Good morning, everybody. Coming up, Albert Taylor, who has been a NASA aeronautical engineer with nearly two decades of experience working on satellite systems for the space program. And he will, in fact, talk about the space program on this anniversary and the moon. And why we haven't been back, and a lot more. He's the author of the best-selling book, Soul Traveler. We'll talk about that, of course, as well. And he's an active member of the International Association of Near-Death Studies. I didn't know about that one, so obviously that's a road we're going to go down this night as well. So all of that coming up. To repeat a very sad announcement for you, Father Malachi Martin is near death, folks. He's in critical condition in the hospital in New York, and he had a fall after what looked like a good recovery. He had a fall that produced blood on the brain, and very much like Danyan, they put in a shunt, literally drilled and put in a shunt to remove the blood and, you know, remove the pressure. And then they removed the shunt. And at that time, he had seizures, extreme seizures of some sort. And then following that, at about 1:30 this afternoon, New York time, yesterday, the father suffered a stroke, a very serious stroke. He's received extreme unction. Your prayers are urgently requested. Should Father Malachi Martin live to Friday, he will be 78. I'll keep you informed. We've got a lot of very good programs coming up for you if you have just joined us. In addition to Albert Taylor coming up in a few moments, we have tomorrow night a forensic psychologist, the kind of guy who looks into the brain of the killer, the violent killer, the Hannibal Lecters, the... Son of Sam's, those kinds of killers, the Littleton business, all of it tomorrow night. Should be very, very interesting. Also in the first hour, Stephen Bassett has a couple of surprises for you. We'll do that in the first hour. And then the following night, the next night, we are going to have on the former CEO of U.S. Web, Joseph P. Firmage, who also will have some pretty big surprises for you. As a matter of fact, I heard from him just a few hours prior to airtime. And it's a show you're not going to want to miss. In the following week, we will have on another mover and shaker, Bob Bigelow, and I think Robert Bigelow of the Bigelow Foundation. Both these men have done a lot of behind-the-scenes funding of very serious research. Bob Bigelow has never, to my knowledge, done a radio interview. This will be his first. So, a lot of things coming up, more than I have time to tell you about right now. Is Albert Taylor. Good to have you on again, Albert.
Thank you, Art. It's a pleasure to be here, especially today.
It is a good day for you to be on, since you were with NASA for 2 decades working on the space program. It's good to have you back. And,
thanks.
You know, everybody's been talking about it all day long. It's been on CNN and all the networks and the big celebration, all the rest of it. But
right.
the big question, really, Albert, that everybody asks, including my callers and myself, it's been 30 years.
Right.
What the hell? We haven't gone off the planet, save circling it in the shuttle at low altitude. We've been staying home for 30 years since
right.
we did it. Why? What's going on?
Right. Well, it's multifaceted. A lot of things happen. Right after Apollo 11 landed, you know, we in America somehow lose interest in flights that aren't the first one. And especially toward Apollo 17, a lot of people weren't, they had to beg to get on the television stations just to get airplay because a lot of people weren't even interested anymore.
Yeah, I do remember that, as a matter of fact, how mm-hmm. interest fell off. Because
right. And it did the same thing with the shuttle. Until the Challenger accident, then everyone was watching that first flight, and then here we are back again where a lot of people have no idea what's even going on with the shuttle missions. You know, and then the thing about it is, back when I think it was during the Gemini program, it was proposed that we produce a reusable spacecraft where we could build a space station and use that space station to build another vehicle to ferry back and forth or shuttle back and forth to a possible lunar base that we would build.
Sure.
And then that lunar base would be used to
Mars.
Facilitate a halfway station back and forth to Mars.
Right. Well, what happened to all that?
Well, all of that is vision. I mean, vision. What happened was, all of a sudden, we started having financial crunches. People didn't understand what the space program was for, what we were getting out of it, and it should have been really told to the public the benefits of the space station. Things like Velcro we wouldn't have, and miniaturization of computer chips and things like that. We would have none of those if it hadn't been for the space program.
So then, how do we make the argument effectively now?
Well, right now a country, we need vision. We need not only the space station currently is not the space station that can facilitate the things that I mentioned a few seconds ago.
Well, and it also is coming in so way far over budget.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, that's due to about 4 or 5 redesigns.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I've had people like Gene Myers on here with workable plans for very, very large stations.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some surprises coming up from guests on things that are going to be done outside of government,
mm-hmm.
which will blow some minds, I'll tell you. But basically, we're doing the small,
right.
expensive, elitist, a few people go to space kind of thing. That's what our government is doing, and no more. And we really talk about it sometimes, but hell, we haven't been back to the moon. We haven't.
Right.
We should have been to Mars by now.
We have no long-term plans for our space program. We have, like Kennedy said, we're going to the moon when we
right.
had only had a suborbital flight.
Right.
So that was extreme vision on his part, and we made it. But right now, the space station was supposed to be this halfway point, but now it can't facilitate that. So, you know, in essence, it's several times over budget, and it can't perform the function it was originally supposed to perform.
Right.
So what do we need it for? Really, we don't know what we need it for.
What would you prefer to see the money spent on?
I would prefer to go back to original designs of the space station when it had full capability to do a lot of things. It could even expand itself. It had an onboard shed that a space vehicle would be built in. It was the Cadillac of space stations. Now it's a compact economic model, which really is a floating laboratory, and that's going to replace the Mir space station, but it's not going to have any more capabilities. I would like to see that, because with that opens the door to our solar system. We can do a lot more. And personally, if we can't do that, then I think we're wasting our money. I would also like to see more money put into the Delta Clipper or the vertical takeoff and return vehicle that a few aerospace companies were coming up with.
Yes.
That would be good. And we also need a heavy lifting vehicle, because we don't have a vehicle that can put a lot of tonnage in orbit right now.
That's correct.
The Russians have the Energia booster, which is heavy lifting, but we don't have that at all. So without the heavy lifting vehicle and these other things, we really pretty much are stuck to stay about 300 nautical miles above the Earth, and that's it.
Well, what's the matter with the people?
Well, you know, like I said before, I think the people would rally behind the space station if we said this is what we're going to do, or around the space program. This is where we're going. We're going to build a lunar base because we want to get this. This is the product. And tell the people that. Right now, the average citizen has hard times, is trying to feed their family, they're paying high taxes, and they have no idea why this money is being taken out of their paychecks.
Well, let me play the devil's advocate for a moment and ask you, why should we go back to the moon? We were there. We walked upon it.
Uh-huh.
We didn't find anything spectacular, if you believe all the press clippings and what's been said since, despite innuendo.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing special there.
Well, there is an extremely I think it's predicted that there's an extremely high helium content in the soil.
Mm-hmm.
There's also probably moisture under the soil that we can use for rocket propellants and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It has an observation point that we don't have here. I mean, the closest thing we have is the Hubble Space Telescope.
Right.
From that position, can you imagine mounting a telescope on the moon, doing research from that standpoint? Plus,
Boy. It
would be a great stopping point to help us go. And the knowledge gained on how to live off of this planet would be invaluable. It would be so useful to help us to make that journey toward Mars and actually colonize Mars. You got to start somewhere, and the moon is the closest neighbor. It won't cost us as much time and money as it would to go to another planet, and the information we would gain would be just invaluable.
Could Mars be terraformed?
With the technology that we have today, I would say no, but yes, with future technologies, capabilities, I would say yes, but see, to terraform Mars probably would take a lot of generations and maybe even thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
Presently, we've got to change the atmosphere. We've got to get chemicals into the atmosphere that are not going to release certain gases. They're going to reflect it back in, and eventually start develop. The atmosphere is very, very thin right now, and it would have to double or even triple.
But there is an indication that at one time Mars had great amounts of surface water and atmosphere.
Right.
Where'd that go?
Well, something happened to the atmosphere. Something similar to what's happening to our atmosphere. The ozone is opening up. Our atmosphere is turning to at least some people are predicting, the greenhouse effect. So we don't know if Mars was ever inhabited or if it happened naturally, but something happened to its atmosphere where it slowly started losing it, and it became thin and lost pressure, which is really essential. Right now, if you went there, your blood would boil because the pressure is so thin. So I don't know exactly what happened, but something did happen to change it, and we need to be very aware of that and even study it. That would be another important reason to go there, so that we don't allow that to happen to our own planet.
It's a good point. And there certainly are changes, Albert, going on here on our planet. Ecological changes.
Definitely.
That are astounding.
Mm-hmm.
Changes, as you point out, in the atmosphere, the upper atmosphere, the ozone. all of it, global warming, it appears our weather is certainly changed.
Definitely. What we don't realize, Art, I believe, in a lot of cases, but a lot of people do, is that we are one link in the chain of how this whole system functions. And if that link becomes weaker or more dominant than others than the other, or puts more stress on the other links, then the chain is going to break.
I wonder how really small our margin is here on this planet. In other words, the planet itself is always going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
It's whether or not we're going to be here on it.
And that's very true.
And how many degrees of temperature difference would determine that, I wonder?
Well, we have certain parameters that we as humans can exist within.
Yes.
Plants and some insects have parameters that are beyond what we can.
Yes.
Like, I was amazed that after a forest fire, there were still insects that would come out of the ground and survive the intense heat.
Right.
That we can't. So if those parameters, meaning temperature and oxygen content and things like that, began to shift, it becomes thinner, then, of course, a lot of people are what's going to happen is it won't be catastrophic and happen overnight, but people will slowly start dying of certain illnesses, especially of cancer, when the ozone layer begins to deplete and things like that, and the population will be reduced. Now, whatever happened to the dinosaurs, that's kind of the same thing that happened to them. Their population was gradually reduced until extinction. I don't know if there's a point of no return. I would hope that we haven't gotten there yet.
Well, I would hope that it's not an endless chain of repetitive life and extinction in life, and I want to think of myself as something more than somebody's future WD-40, you know?
Yeah, I wonder about that, too. Is this just the ebb and flow of this particular, dirt ball floating in space, where life forms come up, become very civilized and advanced, and then somehow either destroy themselves or destroy the planet till the planet no longer supports them, and then the planet goes back into a recovery mode?
Well, there are many mainstream scientists now who think that may be exactly the case.
And you know what? If you look at how many species have been on this planet and that are now extinct, which I think it's like 90%, then the probability is that it's exactly like that. But the one thing we don't know about ancient civilizations as much as we'd like to, but the one thing we do know is we do have capability and technologies and free will that we don't have to let it go that way if we spend time to understand how it functions.
Well, there's a lot of people struggling at the cutting edge trying to do exactly that right
Definitely.
Now. Whether we win that race or not.
It's going to take planetary awareness and action, not just talk. Action. I mean, there's some things that I love that I have or that you may have or something like that may be causing this damage, over...
That we might not even be aware of.
Right. So we're just going to have to give... We may have to give up some things that we've become very, very comfortable with.
Albert, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back. The wind, the rain, and the chain. This seems fitting, doesn't it? Listen carefully.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM, Somewhere in Time. We take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Albert Taylor is here, and we'll get back to him in a moment. This was a very short UPI article that ran and then did not run again. A reporter for the Vineyard Gazette newspaper told WCVB-TV in Boston that he was out walking Friday night, just about the time of the crash, and saw a big white flash in the sky off Philbin Beach. Well, hard to say whether there's any relationship or not, but that does appear to be some sort of eyewitness testimony. I guess we'll know in the next couple of days if and when they make recovery of that airplane. All right. We We're going to talk for a second about radio, because that's my favorite subject of all the world, radio. It's the best medium there is. People, I've been, you know what? I've been offered more than 13 television shows in the last 6 months, and I've turned them all down, every single last one of them. Big ones, some of them really big, too. And it's because I, bless your hearts out there, and I watch it, but I don't like being on TV. I just don't like it. I love radio. I have a true, honest, abiding love for radio, and I don't love TV. No disrespect to any of you TV folks out there. It's a very powerful medium. There's no question about it, but it's not mine, and I don't wish it to be. Now to Albert Taylor. And Albert, I'm going to say this politely, but a lot of people believe that the reason that we have not, the reasons that we have not gone back to the moon have little to do with public apathy and more to do with what was found,
right?
Or what may be there. And so they think some of what you've said is a bunch of crap.
Right. Yeah, I you know, I have no reason to steer it in either direction. Just having worked there for so long, and I'm a space enthusiast, and that's where I'm coming from. I'm someone, I love spacecraft. I love exploration and all of that. And I got to see the political machine from within, and I remember the layoffs. I remember the redesign. I was part of that. And I remember how we were all running around saying, but it won't be able to do this. I remember how people were being fired and walked off the compound because their part of the space station no longer existed. And so it's not just, I'm not talking about the, from a media standpoint. I'm talking about actually hands-on, and I was there working on the hardware.
I hear you.
I actually did training of astronauts at Johnson Space Center, so
I
that's
the
perspective.
Well, one of those astronauts is Edgar Mitchell, Apollo 14, right? And I've interviewed Edgar a number of times.
Right.
And there was something really, really strange that manifested during those interviews, and that was, when Edgar was asked to comment about his emotions, feelings, and recollections when he was actually walking on the moon, he became suddenly very vague and sort of launched into a, you know, Art, here's something I really haven't understood myself in all these years, that my recollections of it all are kind of surrealistic. And that's always puzzled me a little bit.
Right.
Have any thoughts?
Well, you know, I think, well, I'm only guessing, because I think I met Edgar Mitchell one time when I was working on SDI, Strategic Defense Initiative. He came through and was talking to a few people in a classified area that I was
in. Sure.
But, you know, the one thing that I've noticed is that there are a lot of astronauts who have had experiences or some kind of vision or sighting was during a program that they're very, very reluctant to talk about. It may be partially because if you don't understand it, you may sound kind of kooky.
Well, there's that, and there's the fact that so many of the astronauts have had such terribly, terribly troubled or tragic lives. And it's as though when you listen, for example, to Neil Armstrong, the one small step for mankind guy.
Oh, yeah, we know who he is.
He's rather circumspect and intriguing when he talks about, he went to the White House one time and said something really interesting about wondrous things that we will be discovering, wondrous things that are out there. And when he talked of it not as something that he's guessing might be if we explore, but something that he knows is out there. Knows is out there.
Or at least that's how he presents it, how he presents himself.
That's how he presents himself.
Right.
That's right.
Right.
So
Well, I you know...
I'm open-minded about all of this.
I can't say for sure what happened and what Neil and Michael Collins and Buzz and everybody else actually know that they haven't shared with the public, but I can tell you this. I have had a secret clearance since I was 17 years old. I'm 43 now. I have worked on things that probably no one will even talk about, and if they do, you won't see it for another 20 to 30 years.
Let me lay this on you. I've got a friend in Hawaii who is a television reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And though it's not for me, God bless TV. I have nothing against television except where I'm part of it. But he went and covered a discussion with Buzz Aldrin. And mm-hmm. at the end of the presentation, Buzz Aldrin unveiled a big picture of a gray.
Mm.
A gray alien, you know,
wow.
the typical gray. And his final comment to the audience was, they are out there. And there was a sort of nervous little
wow.
chuckle that went through the audience. And nobody, because it was the end, nobody got to really ask him what he meant by that or whether it was supposed to be some kind of joke or...
Wow.
But he said that.
Wow, I didn't know that. That really stands out to me. Because Buzz is one of the few scientists back in the Apollo program that went into space. He was, I think he was one of the only scientists or aeronautical engineers that was in space.
Well, some might absorb that comment and think, aha, he saw something.
Mm-hmm.
Others might absorb that comment and simply sort of have the, look how many stars and systems and planets there are. And from the movie, if they are not out there, what a waste of space kind of comment.
Well, personally, Art, from all the things that I've seen, and I've seen a lot of incredible technologies that are classified top secret even, and I've wondered on where they've originated because it seemed to make a huge leap in anything that we had worked on previously. I can say this, that I don't think it's a question of whether they're out there. I think it's more of a question is when is the government going to admit it? That's how I feel about it. I think the evidence is almost overwhelming.
I track a lot of people doing a lot of work in this area, lawyers, lobbyists back in Washington who think the political venue is the way we're going to break this open.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I agree with that. In other words, I don't think that political pressure, and I know Steve Bassett's sitting out there cringing, but I don't think political pressure is going to do a damn thing, and we're not going to know until we're meant to know.
Right. I don't think so either. I mean, wasn't it the senator from New Mexico who tried to get information?
A Congressman Schiff, yes.
Right, and he was stonewalled. I mean, so I think the only way that it's going to be revealed is from a meltdown, meaning a scandal, huge one, where the evidence cannot be hidden anymore, that kind of thing, because I believe, and this is why I think that, because having been in the military and worked on nothing but military programs, everything is under the label of national security.
Well, let me tell you something. Mm-hmm. NIDS, which is financed by Bob Bigelow,
mm-hmm.
recently did a study and asked the high-end percentage of the public, a big survey with a very small error margin. They asked people in the survey, if there's extraterrestrial life out there, do you think the government would hide it?
Oh, definitely.
The answer came back. 8 out of 10
mm-hmm.
said absolutely.
Yes.
And hardly any survey that you run, short of the one about George Bush right after the war,
right.
gives you that high of a percentage ever
right.
on anything.
Well, it makes perfectly good sense. If you think about it, let's just simplify it a little bit. Now, you have an island where their most effective weapon is the bow and arrow. And all of a sudden, a world war, for some odd reason, a plane crashes and the natives on another part of the island find in the wreckage a machine gun.
Right.
Okay? They're not going to tell everybody, the other natives, that they found this incredible thing. They're going to figure out how to use it, how to make more of them, and then they're going to use it to sustain or take some type of control over their little piece of the island. I think that's what we would do, and I think that's what we have done, is we're trying to maintain national security and control.
And so you're really, then you are saying that our little piece of the island, in this case the United States,
mm-hmm.
if it possessed this kind of technology, would be back engineering like crazy.
Oh, yeah,
would be
definitely.
Doing all kinds of things with the technology,
definitely.
But sure as hell not telling the population nor
right.
the world about it.
Right, because when you tell the American citizens, you're also telling the enemies of this country and people who would do us wrong. So you can't let everybody know. Unfortunately, once you let it out there, loose lips sink ships. I mean, it's been around for a long time. We know that. So that's why if it's out there, it's not necessarily because we are the threat, even though they may want to squelch some kind of panic.
Can I ask
I don't
you
know how people react to extraterrestrial.
Yes, can I ask you a straight-out question?
Sure.
And if you can't answer it, then I will. I'll take my answer from that.
Okay.
But
if I can't answer it, I'll start talking about my book.
Okay. since you had Secret and Beyond clearances, were you or are you aware that anything that we have just been discussing is more than speculation?
Based on my experience or just...
Yes, direct knowledge.
That's a difficult one to answer.
So where can they get your book?
My book is available in all the bookstores, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble.
It's called Soul Traveler, folks.
Soul Traveler is available nationwide. It's even in the libraries. So if you don't have any money, you can read it for free. It's not about that. What's really important to me is the message within the pages, because I'm sharing my description of what has happened to me and which has changed my life in a spiritual level that I never, ever dreamed possible.
Well, one thing that, of course, everybody would be curious about is how you go from being a hardware guy, an engineer with NASA for all those
right.
two decades, and make the giant leap for mankind into the metaphysical. I mean, how do you do that?
It's real simple, Art. It's called midlife crisis. No. No, I've been having some strange... I was still training astronauts at Johnson Space Center when these things started happening to me more often. They used to happen about once a week. But about 7-8 years ago, I started having some strange nocturnal experiences that really scared me. And I started keeping a diary. And they were related to, like I've mentioned before, a superstition that's been in my family for a long, long time. And that has to do with night paralysis, where you wake up in the middle of the night and you can't move, but you can see
that's
and hear.
That's how you and I met.
That's how I started writing this book, because I was having these episodes not only once a night usually, but sometimes three times a night, and they were scaring me so bad as a grown man, I would literally stay up all night long afraid to go back to sleep. That's how I got into it. I feel like I was kicked or thrown into it rather than something that I consciously wanted to explore.
All right. When this paralysis, and many, many of us have experienced that at night, began,
mm-hmm.
it is damn scary stuff.
Very scary.
Wake up in a sweat. It's awful.
Right.
How did you learn to begin to control that?
Well, I had a lot of opportunities. Especially in one night, I got a chance to experience it three times. So it wasn't like one night and then a week later. I was having a nightly basis. And then what happened, this was happening by itself. And so as being a researcher, I wanted to know if there was something physically wrong with me, neurologically or something like, or psychologically. So I started going through the process of elimination, and I stumbled upon the reason why it was happening more often than not, and the way I stumbled upon that is because I just started duplicating what I did on the night that it happened by itself. And when I did that, when I was able to find this thing, which has to do with interrupting your sleep pattern, I was able to experiment with it a lot more than just waiting for it to happen. And when I was able to do that, that's when I got a little bit braver and a little bit braver, and I realized that I was safe because nothing happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when I got the courage to start exploring this and to find out what it really was.
Now, I know that you've called your book Soul Traveler. Mm-hmm. Are you really sure that it is our soul that's traveling?
Well, if I were sitting...
in your living room and you and I were just having coffee and you said, Al, do you really believe in this stuff and what's really going on? I would have to say, Art, I never in a million years would have believed this 7 years ago. I would have thought you were nuts if you had told me I'd be talking about this or even that this was something that was real. But I can tell you, after having all of these experiences, and I continue to have them, and they build upon each other, they're not isolated, they've rounded my understanding of this phenomena and who and what I am, I have to tell you, one-on-one, Art, yes, I am thoroughly convinced, 110%, that we definitely have a soul, and it can operate independently of the physical body.
There are a lot of people who talk about mind and soul, that there is a difference. And all of this is going to wind shortly into near-death stuff, because I know that you've done a lot on that.
Right. A lot of my friends have died and come back.
Yeah. A lot of people say that when you sleep, you experience a little slice of death.
Death each night. Correct.
You agree with that.
Totally, too. Yes.
And that little slice of death can include movement from the body of the soul as it moves when you die.
Correct. The only difference, I believe, between what we do each night, consciously or subconsciously or unconsciously, the only difference between that and death is that we come back to our physical bodies. Consciousness-wise, in the experience, I believe it's almost the same. And as a matter of fact, I have to quote a dear friend of mine, Robert Peterson. He said that we are the ghosts, and I like that, because truly we are. We just have a place to come back to.
But, you know, some nights you go to sleep, and you don't even dream. It's just velvet blackness, right?
Well, you don't remember.
Well, you don't remember. All right.
Right.
So to you, when you wake up to your conscious mind, you have just had velvet blackness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Other nights, you have dreams or vivid experiences.
Right.
With regard to people who have come close to death or to death's door and then come back, some experience something magnificent, others experience velvet blackness.
Right.
Right?
Right, correct.
When we come back, let's talk about what that might mean. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Albert Taylor is here from NASA work to metaphysical work. Quite a leap, huh?
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 3rd of September, 1999.
All right, and I am reminded by the man himself, Dick Allgaier, and that's not the way to pronounce it. I know it's Allgire, who is a news anchor in Hawaii. Reminds me it was Stormy Musgrave and not Buzz Aldrin, who unveiled that little gray at the end of the talk that he gave in Hawaii. So, sorry about that. It was Stormy Musgrave, not Buzz Aldrin. But the same questions apply, and the same intrigue applies. Sorry, I got the name wrong. And, you know, this is worth noting for your consideration. There is coincidence, and there is... And then I don't know what else there is. There's coincidence. And I have somebody here who sees a lot of coincidence this last weekend leading up to today. When you consider the 30th anniversary of Apollo 11, JFK Jr., Chappaquiddick, and for that matter, JFK Sr.'s decision to send men to the moon, there's a lot of synchronicity and coincidence, some of it rather unhappy, with all of that. And I don't know that it means that it adds up to anything, but you've got to admit, it's thought-provoking. let's launch right into NDEs and soul travel.
Okay.
They appear to be related, and you're telling me, yes, they are.
Right.
That our soul, in both cases, leaves the body.
Right.
But my question to you prior to the top of the hour was, a lot of times I go to sleep, velvet blackness, don't remember a thing, just had a good sound sleep, I wake up, hello world, consciousness returns.
Right.
Now I'm told, yes, I dream, whether I remember it or not.
Right.
But to me personally, there's a big difference.
Right.
And sometimes I like velvet blackness.
Mm-hmm.
I really like it.
Right.
It doesn't scare me as a little slice of death probably ought to scare a person.
You look at it as a vacation or a break period, right?
Yeah, I have a very, very active life, as you know, intellectually, and I'm going all the time, and mm-hmm. so it's a relief. A lot of times when I dream, Al, and I wake up, the dream is so vivid mm-hmm. that I feel like I've been working.
Mm, okay. And see, what we're talking about regarding soul travel, out-of-body experiences, going exterior, astral projection, whatever label
yes.
you want to put on it,
whatever.
You don't get that tired feeling. Because the body does truly sleep, and matter of fact, it's almost like a suit of clothing that you once you take it off and the soul slips out of it, the body pretty much is just a machine that keeps running on its own. It doesn't move independently, and you don't toss and turn like you would if you were having a rough dream. It's very, very different.
All right. You know quite a bit about NDEs. You're an active member of the International Association of Near-Death Studies, right?
I've been exposed to a lot of different people who've had near-death experience. Danyan and
oh, yes.
and I was in Greece with Raymond Moody and I've met hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who are members and have had.
And I too have mm-hmm. interviewed probably all the people you're talking
probably,
about.
Probably,
right
I wouldn't doubt it.
Now. They are not the rule. They are the exception.
Right.
And people don't really understand that. In other words, they're the exception. They really are. When you survey people who have had arrested life signs,
mm-hmm.
More than not, they don't remember a damn thing. It was velvet blackness. Now,
right. There's a mixture.
How do you reconcile that?
Well, the memory is a very interesting thing, and that's what we're talking about. We're talking about your ability to consciously recall whatever is up inside your cranium, you know. And what's something interesting about the memory is just because the memory doesn't present itself when you make the demand or when you try to recall it, doesn't mean that it's still not locked away in there and going to be exposed at a future date. How many times, Art, have you had a dream, and then it wasn't until maybe 2-3 days later, or maybe even a week later, that something happened in your waking life that all of a sudden you remembered the dream? It's happened to quite a few of us. I don't know how many other people, but sometimes I thought, oh, my God, I forgot I dreamt that. So it's still there, whether I'm able to pull it to the surface readily when I want to and right after the experience. Really doesn't have anything to do with whether it's going to be there to help me at a later date.
No, that, it doesn't work that way for me. For me, Al, if I have a vivid dream, and I have quite a few,
mm-hmm.
I remember it vividly the moment I awake.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I'm halfway through my first cup of coffee,
it dissipates.
It's almost gone.
Right.
If I don't consciously talk to my wife or myself about the experience I just had,
mm-hmm.
by the time I've had my second cup of coffee, it's gone.
Right.
I mean,
right.
really, just gone.
That's kind of normal. That's very normal. That's why that happens to the majority, as a matter of fact. What I tell people is when you have, and that's why if you read talk to a lot of people who do dream work and talk about how to recall dreams, what I tell people is to write it down immediately because it's not going to be as fresh as it would be a few hours to days later. And the one thing that you'll be missing, especially if you want to understand it thoroughly,
yes.
is you won't have the emotional the emotional content that you had right after the dream. It'll lose some. For instance, if I had to write my book now and recall some of the experiences that I had, I wouldn't have put into it all the emotions that I felt that
night. Sure. Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I guess my question is, it's a hard one. It's a devil's... I tell my audience when I'm playing devil's advocate, I try to.
Mm-hmm.
But if more people than not do not have an experience when all vital signs are gone,
mm-hmm.
then why is it not at least possible to suggest that there may not be anything at all but velvet blackness?
Well,
because some percentage experience this thing they seem to recall does not absolutely make it so. And if it does make it so, convince me.
Well, I'm not going to try to convince you. I can only say this because I haven't had a near-death experience. But I can say it's not saying more people than not is not as accurate, because more people who have near-death experiences are people who, let me back up, people who have had their vital signs cease for a period of time.
Yes.
The majority do have some type of experience. The minority do not remember anything.
Are you sure about that? Because I've heard the opposite.
Well, I'm a member of IONS, and I've been a member for 8-9 years.
I know, but all you people interview are people who have had the experiences. The ones who either had a negative experience, which is a very small reported percentage, or those who have had no experience.
Well, to tell you the truth, I've run into all of the above in the last 8 years. Some people have said, I don't remember one little thing. All they have is the medical report that says their heart stopped beating.
Right.
But I can say there's been 8 million people in the United States to date, maybe more now, who've had near-death experiences. Now, one interesting thing is that I went to Seattle not too long ago. And do you know they have more people in Seattle who have had near-death experiences than any other state in the union? And do you know why?
I don't have the slightest idea why.
Well, more people in Seattle, more citizens, have taken CPR than any other state in the union. So more people have been brought back from the brink than any place else.
Oh!
So that's a great place to look at the percentage of, out of all those people, more people have had some type of non-physical recall of an experience than people have not.
Maybe that's where they got the title Sleepless in Seattle.
Or Lifeless in Seattle.
Lifeless in Seattle. That's really interesting. Where did you get that?
Well, I've spoken up there like 3 times to the largest group in the nation of IONS, and I've also have a dear friend who is on the fire department there who has literally, I mean, he even saved Jimi Hendrix's father's life, and he was the one who gave me all these statistics, because he's actually out there doing this, and they have an extensive training program where they help a lot of citizens learn CPR. Hmm. It's quite phenomenal in Seattle. I mean, so if you take that given as that a sample of the ratio of people versus the people who haven't had the experience or have no recall versus the people who have in Seattle area, well, you've got the majority who are having some type of experiences. Not all identical. Not everybody sees the light. Not everybody has the same type. But there are more people recalling consciousness after the body ceases to function than people who aren't.
Do you believe in the concept of heaven and hell?
The concept of heaven and hell is kind of a Christian concept. And I would say that I'm not a religious person.
Yes.
I'm a spiritual person.
Yes.
And me personally, because now we're asking for my beliefs, me personally, I don't believe in hell. I would say that if you want to call it heaven, you could. If you want to call it Valhalla or the astral plane or whatever, I believe that there definitely is a location that non-physical or deceased spirits, entities, souls do go. And even in that location, there are multiple levels in that reality. And most of the things that I discovered, because a lot of these areas I've had, like, out-of-body experiences.
Did you ever get to see What Dreams May Come?
Yes, I did.
Well, that describes what I think I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I interviewed the producer of that movie. And
yeah, I heard that show.
Good. Did you hear the NDE of Sarah?
No, I didn't.
You didn't. She was a young lady on her way home from church, volunteer work, who got hit and thrown, 100 yards or some tremendous amount of... She was on a bicycle, and she got hit hard,
mm-hmm.
and she died.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all cessation of... in fact, she's still not fully recovered years later now. But she went to a hellish place. Albert, she went to a place where there was more than hell. There was a combination of things. There were many places,
mm-hmm.
Sort of rooms. She would describe them as rooms,
mm-hmm.
where there would be thousands of tortured souls.
Mm-hmm.
She encountered a white light. She spent time with that. And then she returned. It took about 2 hours to unwind the story, but it was extremely convincing. And if you look at what dreams may come, it says, basically, that you judge yourself.
Right. That I do definitely agree with.
You do?
Definitely.
Well,
I don't believe that God is going to be judging us like we are going to be judging ourselves.
Yeah, it's not like a court case.
Right.
But, Albert, if you judge yourself, then surely there are those who will judge themselves not worthy of reward.
Definitely. Definitely.
And so where do they put themselves, Albert?
That's going to have a tremendous impact on your experience after leaving the physical body. Because not that that has to happen or that it's in the cards or etched in stone that it has to happen, but what I find, and I find this in the out-of-body experience, is that a lot of your thoughts can manifest into thought forms and experiences if you let them run amok. It's a, so if you have this belief that, you know, like in Dreams May Come, she had a belief that she had done so many horrible things, and that's why she was there, not because she was sentenced. Is because in that realm, you really have a lot of...
When I asked you the question, though, I didn't ask you who sent you there. I just said, do you believe in the concept of? So, really, you do believe in the concept of.
Definitely. Definitely. But I believe that it's not a permanent hell. You're not sentenced there, and you're not going to be there for eternity or anything like that. But, yes, definitely, you can imprison yourself with your own thoughts and beliefs. Definitely.
That's what makes sense to me.
You can do that in life, though. And in death, because a lot of people convince themselves of certain things here without any tangible proof and operate within a kind of a fenced life, so to speak. So you can definitely do it either way. It's about you. It's almost like this. I say this. We create our own realities in the body and out of the body in a lot of cases.
Yeah, I believe that. I believe that. And for some, they would not allow themselves... They know what they did in their life. They would be their own worst, harshest judges.
Exactly.
It's like facing the hanging judge you'd never want to see yourself.
Exactly. Now, if you knew that in the beginning when you were maybe stepping off the path, so to speak, whatever you may have be judging yourself on, if you knew that it's not about someone else judging me or like the child doing something that the parent doesn't know about, and if they get caught, the parent's going to chastise them.
Yep.
If you knew that beyond a shadow of a doubt that it was going to be you that was letting you down, that would have a tremendous impact on whether you did something or not, or whether you stepped off the path.
Then there's another thing. There's an unfairness to it. Those who have had NDEs, you know Danyon very well.
Yes.
Well, prior to his NDE, he was one son of a bitch.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Self-admitted. He'll tell you that.
Oh, definitely.
After his NDE, while he still carries some of those same qualities,
mm-hmm.
he did, in fact, drastically modify his life.
Mm-hmm.
And why should somebody have an opportunity to get a view of what it's going to take to end up in a different place while others do not? How can that be explained? In other words, the mass population never has an NDE, never has a full life review, never judges themselves, gets a second chance, in effect. Most of us do not.
Well, I look at it differently because I look at it like this. If I hadn't had an out-of-body experiences or had these experiences all my life, I think my particular soul is so stubborn and so fixed in its views and things like that, so it's going to take something like that for me to change. And unfortunately, maybe Danyon's spirit is so hard-headed that it takes a near-death experience to open him up and really make him an instrument to share this with many, many, many people.
Well, That's a good answer, I guess. But it still seems.
I wouldn't have believed it, Art, if this hadn't happened to me. You could tell me all day long, I would not have believed in any of this. The experience is what convinced me. Just like you and I were talking about this at least a year or two before you had that experience in Paris.
Yes.
And up until that point, it was interesting conversation.
Interesting conversation, but
now,
listen,
it's a part of your reality. Or it was.
Only to a degree. Mm-hmm. In other words, I have no question what happened to me in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
I was out of my body. I was up above Paris. And it was, I mean, there was still to this very day, no question at all. But there is one nagging question that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what that is. And that is that, yes, I was out of my body, but I had a functioning, living brain.
Right.
And so, yes, I believe that our brains can do this, that
mm-hmm.
we are capable of projecting, if you want to call it our soul,
mm-hmm.
we'll call it our soul, or our spirit, or whatever. Yes, we can project that out of our living body, but that's
mm-hmm.
all I can attest to. I can't say that that's as close to death as you're ever going to be, or that's what death is going to be like,
right.
or anything else, because, brother, I ain't been there.
Right, exactly.
I've only been up above Paris.
Right. Now, Art, yeah, I have to, when I started having these experiences, and I didn't know what it was, I didn't know the terminology, I hadn't read any of Robert Monroe's books or any of that stuff, I had to do this. I had to ask myself this question, and only this question: why would I have this capability? If it's not soul traveling or whatever it is, why is that happening?
Yeah.
Why can my spirit, why can my brain project beyond its physical body? Why does it have that capability? Something useless?
Oh, now that's a really good question. No, I don't think it's useless, and I think that is an appropriate question, and one that we're going to tackle when we get back. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM. From the 3rd of September, 1999.
Her hands are never cold. She's got Betty Davis eyes. She'll turn her music on you. You won't have to think.
Premier Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from September 3rd, 1999.
Good morning, everybody. If you want to take a ride, stick around, because we are going to tell you how. We've got the expert, probably the nation's expert on that right now, Albert Taylor, who wrote a book called Soul Traveler, and he can tell you how to leave your body. And I can tell you, it can be done. Not that I had any direction in what happened to me. Since the passing of Robert Monroe, who I had the distinct honor of interviewing, probably the person best known now for out-of-body experiences is Albert Taylor. And a lot of people out there want to know specifically what this is, so I guess we're going to have to tell them and tell them how they can do it. But why you? So many people don't have this, but Albert Taylor has not only has it, but has it almost at will.
I ask myself that same thing, Art. You know, and a lot of people, some people have told me why it was me, because I really can't say for sure. But for some reason, with the background that I have and all that, I didn't come from a woo-woo kind of background or
right.
Upbringing. I'm a very rational person. I have I can't even think of the word. I've always been working in aerospace and always succeeded in everything that I've done. I've always been able to present legitimate and valuable information to NASA and a bunch of other people. So this thing
I guess because I have all those credentials, maybe that helps to add credibility to this thing that's so unbelievable, and that maybe that is what it takes to actually get the information out to people who would otherwise be skeptical.
Okay. Well, I love asking you hard questions, so here's another one.
And I was choking. No.
We were ruminating about the space program, 30 uh-huh. years since we went to the moon. Why aren't we going out? Blah, 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 blah.
Uh-huh.
If soul travel is real,
mm-hmm.
and if, in fact, you can go to other... If you can go to the moon, soul travel,
yes.
the moon, Mars...
Yes.
The other planets,
yes.
distant stars,
definitely.
In effect, exceeding the speed of light,
definitely.
Then, who's to say that the rocket ships, the hardware, the big heavy energy boosters or Saturns that we had or whatever, are the way to go at all? Because maybe that's not the way interplanetary distances are bridged.
Well. We're talking about the majority of the population are not going to be able to retrieve this kind of data. And the majority of the population are not going to be able to remote view and do things like that. So it is the way to go until we make some kind of shift where the majority of the people have this capability. Then, to tell you the truth, having to gain the information physically will cease to be as important. But right now, it is very important because the majority of us are very physical beings and haven't our talents haven't blossomed yet regarding this.
Well, that I understand. That I understand. But I mean, if soul travel is everything you say it is,
mm-hmm.
then, well, frankly, with what we know right now and what Einstein has taught us, we are not going to go to other suns and other systems. We can't do that. It will take too long. Soul travel, on the other hand,
uh-huh.
Will get us there if what you're saying is correct.
Definitely, definitely. But you know, the thing is that even it's a lot easier to have a high reliability in a mechanical device that we create to transport us to a new location than with the out of body experience. It's not 100%. You can't do it every time, and it depends on whether you're going to be relaxed. So that makes it very difficult for laboratory conditions and things like that. So until a new generation, or maybe we as a species are evolving to this point where maybe the children being born now are going to have this capability more than the generation, my generation. Maybe we're going to evolve to a state where this is going to be very commonplace. We may be in transit, so we can't expect a lot out of it right now. What we can do is explore it and try to understand it as much as possible.
All right. Tell people out there, if they want to try this, and yes, ladies and gentlemen, what you're about to hear, it's true, it can be done. You can leave your body, it's real, and this man can tell you how to do it. It begins frequently with a very discomforting
paralysis
right. Followed by a kind of a buzzing sound,
correct.
A very loud buzzing sound that you'll hear as you're on the edge of sleep.
Correct.
Or,
and a vibration.
And a vibration, yes. All of that. I've had that. I can't stand it. It makes me nauseous.
Mm-hmm.
And I reject it every time I've ever had it. But if you're able to master and get past that, then you can travel outside your body. And the question is, how do you do that, Albert?
Well, there's after having done, I've written like 5 different techniques or so in my book. But there's 2 that I really think are very, very important. And the one that is easy for people who have trouble quieting the mind.
Yes.
If you have trouble quieting your mind, then this one helps you. And that one is called the interrupted sleep technique. And what that is for various reasons, you want to try to control this whole thing from beginning to end. And part of that control comes with eating early on, meaning before 6 o'clock at night.
Mm.
The reason you want to do that is because late at night, the body is still using energy to process food, and you want to kind of free the body up from that. So what you want to do is go to bed maybe about 9 or 10 o'clock,
mm-hmm.
set your alarm clock to wake up about maybe 1:30 or 2 o'clock in the morning, get out of bed, turn on Art Bell, and listen to Art for a while. I'm not going to say how long.
Yeah.
Until you start getting tired or sleepy. Then go back to bed. Drink water. Do not eat anything. You can't eat because that just takes a lot of the steam out of what you're doing.
Right.
Go back to bed and then lay perfectly still and in a very, very comfortable position.
Mm-hmm.
Don't prop your head up very high, that type of thing. And what I like to do is say, if you're laying flat on your back, a lot of people have a lot of discomfort with that. Put something under your knees to prop up your knees a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. Get all your scratching out of the way, itching your nose, and whatever you're going to do. Because once you stop moving, you do not want to move under any circumstances. Because it's going to take a while for your metabolism and your body's functions to slowly slow down. Now, what you want to do with your mind is you want to keep your mind focused on something very, very simple. And that could be just focus on relaxing each muscle in your body one at a time.
Now, I've done that as a method to fall asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, folks, it really does work. If you're having trouble sleeping, relax your finger, relax your hand, relax your arm, relax your shoulder, relax your body, relax your legs. Consciously sit there and go through each part of your body,
right.
Consciously relaxing it.
Automatically.
And it does work. You
right.
Sleep.
And what, you know, it's kind of a twofold thing. The key to getting out of the body is relaxing the physical body. And another thing is that since you've interrupted your sleep pattern, your body still requires about 4 more hours of sleep.
Correct, yes.
So what happens is you're giving your consciousness something to hang on to while the body falls asleep. It's kind of like when you're on the freeway. I've mentioned this before. When you're driving and maybe you've been tired, and no matter how you try to stay awake, for a brief second, you nod out at the wheel.
That's right, and you jerk back and
right.
you go...
No matter how hard you tried,
you say,
your body
still
falls asleep.
Actually, you usually say the same thing that pilots are said to say just before they crash.
Right.
So that's what you're
trying to induce in a safe environment. And you're laying in your bed. You don't have to worry about jerking back awake and finding yourself doing 70 on the wrong side of the freeway or whatever.
Well, these experiences do occur on the cusp of sleep, don't they?
Right. Correct. Exactly.
Which is why you're telling people to interrupt their sleep.
Exactly. And what you want to do is you want to give yourself a fork in the road, because as you're slipping into a different state of consciousness, one thing could happen. If you take the road to the left, let's say, you slip into a dream state with the body. But what this interrupt the sleep technique does is it gives you a better option, a better chance of taking the road to the right, where your body goes to the left and falls asleep, and your consciousness goes to a superconscious level. That's what you want to do. So you want to focus in on just relaxing your body
and
let your body go fall asleep.
Now, I had my experience, which was just poof, and I had no precursor, none of the stuff you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Boom, I was just up there.
Right.
That's how it happened. Was not voluntary.
Right.
Believe me. Now, once you have achieved, taken the right fork in the road...
Mm-hmm.
What can you do?
Well, yeah, the thing is once you take that turn and your body falls asleep and the gate swings open, let's say.
Yes.
The gate swings open and
yes.
The spirit emerges.
Yes.
In its natural state, because that's where you really come from. That's where you know things that you never, ever dreamed about yourself. Once you get to that point, anything and the sky is the limit. I have not found any limitations as far as physical locations on where I could go and what I could access. But what I found out is that the physical is just a minute and very tiny part of where you can go. The non-physical is where you find the universe and things that you never dreamed existed, like life after death, because I never believed in that. I never believed in that at all. I thought we were just this genetic accident that after you died, that was it, you turned to dust. But that door swings open where you can find validation and personal validation, not believing what I say, but you can actually experience it yourself, where you see relatives that you know or that have passed away in the past. You can see strangers even. And you can see things, people or entities that we've written books about, biblical books about, like
non-human,
angels and things like that.
Non-human entities.
Right.
Or you can see this light that everyone talks about when they've had the near-death experience.
Yes.
All of that is available.
And you can travel also in this physical world. In other words, you can go to your living room. You can go to your friend's living room 100 miles away.
Right.
You can do as you will.
You can go anywhere. There aren't any limitations. Some people say, well, if two people don't want you to come into their bedroom, will there be some kind of barrier? Well, unfortunately, no, there won't be. You have access to...
You stay the hell out of my bedroom, Albert. So you...
I got to tell you this. My family is very superstitious. And I remember when I first wrote my book, I was telling my aunt about, auntie, I travel all over the place, and I fly and go in rooms and see things that I never, ever dreamed. And she told me, my aunt said, well, if you come to my room, I'm going to shoot you. I said, auntie, you're going to put holes in your wall.
holes in your wall is right.
But there aren't any limitations that I found.
All right, somebody writes and asks a pretty good question.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible for someone else to enter your dreams, or put another way, to astrally travel with you?
Yes, it is possible to interact with the dream material of somebody else, because what that dream material is it manifests in something called thought forms. You can read thought forms, you can feel thought forms, and in some cases you can influence thought forms, but in very, very limited cases. But yes, you can. You can experience someone's dream, or get as they would experience it, but you can have a sense of what's going on.
Are we talking about a plane where there is not time as we measure it in a linear fashion here?
There is no time. At all.
There is no time.
At all. You are where your state of consciousness wants you to be. If you are aware that you have no limitations regarding time, then the door swings open and you can access that past, present, and future.
So then you might describe them as little slices of immortality.
Definitely, because especially there are a lot of hidden things beyond the physical plane. Things that are very natural and things that are occurring. If you can access, let's say, the past on things that have happened in the past that you knew nothing about that maybe involved you, well, that's going to tell you a lot more about the present and probably a lot more about the future if you know that you have existed in some shape or form in the past, or that something occurred in the past that explains what's happening today in the physical plane.
Well, how about this to consider, Albert? That the human, that mankind may have been going and still is going in exactly the wrong direction. In other words, to achieve all that mankind wants or would like, the pursuit of the physical, the pursuit of the sciences, the pursuit of the academic, may be all the wrong direction, and the right direction may be completely within, and we just simply have missed it.
Or, that's one perspective, or it might be, and I like this one a lot better,
okay.
Is that maybe we're headed in the right direction, it's just we have a choice of running or crawling or walking, and maybe some things that we obsess on along the path slow us down, but yet we still are going to get there. Technology, all these physical things will slow you down regarding that non-physical reality. But I believe we're still headed in the right direction.
So technology is sort of a, what would be the word for it?
A handicap. Spiritual handicap.
Or a distraction.
It is a distraction. It is. To tell you the truth, the five senses are a distraction. So anything your five senses tell you will either... turn your head away from the non-physical, and the more you focus in on what the five senses tell you, the less you're going to be able to perceive something that is non-physical.
But if God or the Creator had meant for us to be spiritual and not physical, then what the hell did he give us noses for, and a mouth so we could make noise, and ears so we could hear, and why did he give us all of these senses if we were not meant to evolve at least through and past them?
Because I believe that the challenge spiritually is overcoming these things. I believe that that's what makes us stronger, is overcoming these things that are so powerful in our lives, and these things that a lot of us only identify with. To overcome that makes you more spiritually sound, I believe. And I believe it's helped me, because I'll tell you, the way I have been brought up to, and the schools and things that I have gone to did not help me to accept what I've written about at all. It was a handicap. I was too logical.
If anything, it conditions you in the opposite direction.
Slows me down.
Right?
Slows me down tremendously, and in a lot of cases reverses my course. But eventually, you know, I couldn't run from this, Art. I couldn't rationalize myself away from it.
Why should anybody out there right now listening who has never traveled outside their body want to?
Well, I get that question a lot.
Good.
And
you've got it now.
The one thing I say is that, and I don't want to generalize and say this is going to happen to everybody, but I can tell you this. In my life, it has changed my perspective on everyday occurrences. It has changed my perspective on how I relate to other people. I have more peace and well-being and satisfaction in my life than I ever dreamed. And even in the face of adversity, I've had some really tragic things happen to me, Art, since you and I have been speaking. I mean, a year ago, my son, who is a Marine, had a horrible car accident and broke his neck and is now in a wheelchair paralyzed. And for a while, he was on a respirator, and we thought we were going to lose him and all of that. And then through that adversity, I had a spiritual light at the end of the tunnel that helped me make it through. And I would say that I'm glad that I had these out-of-body experiences and this change.
In other words,
it
helped you handle that.
Definitely. Definitely.
All right.
I'm so glad that I had it.
I
can't imagine doing without it.
All right. Hold on. We'll be right back. When we get back, we'll open the phone line. So if you have a question for Albert Taylor, author of the best-selling book, Soul Traveler, and yes, you really can travel outside your body, then we'll go to the phones when we get back. Don't touch that dial.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
Good morning, everybody. It probably is, you know, in the end, all about love, isn't it? You know, I got a piece of email that said, hey, Art, Portland, or people up there, are not the only people that have to dial 10 digits. Apparently in Miami, to reach even a local caller, you've got to dial 10 digits. Now, you know, somehow I thought as the years rolled by and the millennium crawled up on us, things would get easier. Before long, we'd be talking to people on our wristwatch, right? But no. Now, we're having to dial 10 digits. I guess it's a good thing we got touch tones, huh? Albert, welcome back. Are you there, Albert?
Yes, I am.
Good, good, good. All right. Wanted to be sure. All right. To the phones. A lot of people want to talk to you. So, first time caller line, Albert Taylor is right here.
Yeah, am I on?
You're on.
Yes, you
okay,
are.
Mr. Taylor. You said it's possible for interplanetary travel through out-of-body experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is it possible to contact other life forms through this experience?
I can only say that it is possible. It is possible for you to perceive whether they can communicate with you. I don't know about the life forms.
Yeah.
If they do exist, it is possible. I put it this way. Not only is that possible, I don't think there are any limitations. I think the only limitations are your ability to focus your thoughts.
Okay. So, in regards with the prime directive, you know, the old Star Trek thing, is that a safe thing to do, to try to contact these people? I mean, because it's always been thought of that the reasons why it's either the government's hiding the fact that we have contacted aliens or the aliens don't want to contact us directly because of the Prime Directive. Do you think that's a safe thing to do?
Well, I'm a metaphysician and I'm a spiritualist, and I say that everything is happening just as it should. So if you're capable of doing that and that happens, then I don't see that being something.
Just how the cards lay, then.
I don't believe we have that much control over what's going on regarding universal law and consciousness. I think everything that happens is a learning phase for each of us, and
yeah,
it is meant to happen. So if you have that capability and you do that, then I think that that is meant to happen.
The more power to you. Okay. Hey, CC Radio, I'm using it. Thanks.
All right, sir. Thank you very much, and take care. It is an amazing device, this radio.
Yeah, to run out and get one.
All right. You should. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hi.
Here's another CC radio guy.
All right.
And the wind-up flashlight.
Wow. Yes, sir?
When I was a child, I'd lay there at night before I'd go to sleep and start, I guess, between, you know, losing consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
I would have periods where I'd hover over the house. I could see myself laying in the bed, and
right,
I would go up to the ceiling. And then as I got older, it started getting less and less. And I was left with one weird quirk. I can stand in front of a mirror for a while and stare at it. And this might sound odd to y'all, but it will, I'll actually change into another form.
Your image?
Have you ever heard of such?
Your image would change?
Yes.
Hmm. Well,
that's just through my eyes. I mean, my friends would, you know.
Well, I've heard of experiments with mirrors. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, people, you know, we'd go into the bathroom or whatever and look in the mirror and say, Merry Widow or something like that. But on a scientific note, a lot of people have done experiments with things called a psychomantium. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Raymond Moody.
Right, Raymond has done it. I've talked to Raymond about it, and a lot of other people have duplicated it. I think even the Monroe Institute has experimented with it. But that's where you put a mirror on one part of the wall with a chair facing it, usually black curtains or some
mm-hmm.
kind of flat black walls,
that's
environment,
right. mm-hmm.
and turn off the lights. And people, even Raymond, well, this is what's amazing to me. Raymond is such a scientist. He cracks me up. Even Raymond will neither confirm nor deny that these things are possible, but he has a whole list of stories he can tell you about personal experiences that have happened to him. So I have heard of people doing that, and I don't know if the mirror allows us to blank our mind or to use that other part of us that can see beyond the mirror. I don't know if that happens, or maybe it's just something that helps us, but definitely people have experiences like that.
Yeah, because I was staring in the mirror for a long time, and I could really put on a show, but of course nobody else would see it.
Right.
Well, listen,
right.
Thanks a lot, and Art, keep up the good work, and
you're
enjoy
welcome.
My radio.
All right, my friend, thank you very much.
Bye.
Take care. Let's see, East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Just fine, sir.
Oh, that's good. I'm listening on the internet.
Okay.
I have a comment. When I was practicing yoga one time, I found myself rising out of my body, and I'm wondering if that pertains to what you're discussing here. What kind of an experience was that?
That's the advanced level that I was talking about. One of the easiest ways is the interrupted sleep technique or through the sleep process. The advanced level is through meditation, and yogi or yoga meditation is part of that. So that is excellent that you were able to do that. I think if you can do it through the meditation, then the sky's the limit. It truly is. That's what everyone, I believe, should try to aspire to and attain, is the ability to do it through meditation and yoga.
My only problem has been controlling where mm-hmm. I go and what happens. I don't seem
right.
to have much control.
Takes practice.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you. I have another quick comment. You were talking earlier about the afterlife and what happens when you die. Now, my belief, and I don't know if you would agree with this or not, is you end up what you think. Like, if you believe in a heaven or hell
sure.
or where you're going, that's where you end up. What do you think about that?
Well, I think a lot of things happen to us on the other side or in the non-physical that have to do with our belief systems, but
right.
those things aren't permanent. in that afterlife situation, eventually whatever the universal reality or truth of where we are is, that eventually filters through, and a lot of the things that we've taken in or we believe that it's going to be like, it eventually dissipates and we get to see a clear picture or get a clear understanding of what that reality is all about.
Kind of like we all ultimately end up in the same place.
Yes, exactly. Eventually, all those beliefs, all the religious things that we have, because, you know, different parts of the world have different religious beliefs. So that shouldn't matter if we're talking about a non-physical area. It should all be the same if it exists at all.
Right,
so eventually all the things that we bring with us from this physical plane eventually dissipates and we see what's really going on.
Gee, just think, if we could only get to that place here on Earth, most of the wars and the killing and the strife and the human misery would all stop.
Yep.
Heaven on Earth, right?
Definitely. Isn't that right?
Yeah, definitely. It would be a wonderful place for all of us. The thing is that we, in the physical plane, I believe, have come up with reasons to separate ourselves from our fellow man, be it whatever you see in your, whatever your eyes tell you, whatever you hear, or whatever. But the reality of the situation is that we aren't separate and that we all are of similar substance and origin. And if the quicker we can realize that, the better, the easier, and the quicker we're going to get along, and the better and the more prosperous, I believe we're going to be.
Ascension of some sort, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, and keep
Thank
up
you.
The good work.
Thank you, and take care. Interesting. That is true, though. We kill on this planet in the name of our gods.
In the name of everything. In the name of a spot of land. In the name of spiritual beliefs or religious beliefs. In the name of visual shades of color, in the name of handicaps, of everything, we divide ourselves on based on almost everything you can imagine. You know what? Remember the Star Trek episode where I think Frank Gorshin was in it, where half of his face was black, maybe the right side.
I
and
remember.
And the other guys was the right
yes.
side was white.
I remember.
That was even a line to draw. Well, he's black on the right side, you know. So I think it does. Whatever differences, we seem to pick those and use those as a tool to separate ourselves.
And they were at war, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
The ones who were black on the right versus the ones who were black on the left.
Yes, exactly.
I remember that.
And Kirk and his crew didn't know the difference.
Yeah, I remember that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hi.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
My question involves near-death experiences. The thought occurred to me that maybe adults are influenced by things they see and hear in the media. I was wondering if you'd ever come across a child that has had a near-death experience and the outcome is any different.
Those are the most fascinating stories I've ever heard as a child. I think it was one of my first year of being a member of the International Association of Near-Death Studies, IANS, and I met a kid, I think he was 13 or 14 years old, but he'd had a near-death experience when he was 7. Mm-hmm. And one of the fascinating things about it is it wasn't religious oriented. It wasn't any of that. It was just kind of spiritually based, and he told it in a way that it didn't matter what religion you were, it still fit in. And I thought that was fascinating, and it was told with innocence and honesty.
Absolutely, because some of the ones I've heard about, they'll lean towards Christianity or Judaism or whatnot. And I thought maybe that a child would have a different outcome.
That's what I found in the child that I had a chance to talk to, is it wasn't bent on his mother's beliefs. It was bent on just a spiritual experience.
Wonderful. Thank you for your time.
Okay, sir. Thank you for your call. First time caller line. You're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hi. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
This is John in Alaska.
Hi, John.
Hi, John.
How you doing?
Okay.
Yeah, I started listening to you a couple hours ago. And when I was a kid, I remembered it, and then you forget after a while. But when I was a kid, I used to do that all the time. And some kids went off, and I sat by a tree, and I went over and listened to what they were saying, and later I started telling them what they were saying, and my sister freaked.
Mm-hmm.
We was real religious. It's all the devil's in you, so I quit doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I started hearing you tonight, and that's pretty good. I think I'll get your book.
Well, you wouldn't believe. Well, you maybe would believe. A lot of the people in my family are very Christian or religiously oriented,
And when I started investigating this, this definitely was out of the norm. I was raised a good Christian, a good Catholic boy, you know, and this was different. And a few of the people in my family to this day are very reluctant to speak to me, even though they are my close relatives.
Yeah.
You know, because they think it's something evil.
I figured maybe I outgrew it or something. But, yeah, when I was a kid, I used to do that all the time. I'd sit under a tree in the summer, nice and warm.
You didn't outgrow it. You were simply conditioned out of it.
Yeah, and that's the tragedy of the whole experience. Children are open to these things and have incredible experiences. Even my own son of 9 years old tells me things that I am just flabbergasted at. But then we grow up where people say, no, you can't do that, or you can only do this, or that means something evil. And we condition ourselves, or we are conditioned by our environment, to turn off to these abilities.
I remember it as a really neat experience. I'm going to have to get your book. See if I can do it again.
All right.
You can. Think positive. You can do it.
All right.
Just don't put a time frame on it.
All right. I'm going to work on it then.
All right.
And great show. I've only been listening for about 6 months, but I like it.
I appreciate your call. Thank you.
All right.
Good to have you on the air.
Good luck.
Let's see. East of the Rockies, I guess you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Bob in Columbus, Ohio.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Bob.
Okay. This has been happening to me for about 2 years. So, you know, what we were talking about, I've had, you know, I've had the vibration coming out of that, but I've never quite come out of the body yet.
Mm-hmm.
Get kind of nervous about it just before that happens.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then I've also had, you know, you hear the voices just before it happens too. And,
right.
But then the one incident that I'm really calling about is that I went through the vibration period, and I don't know if I was, you know, starting to come out of the body or not, but I could hear, sound like a couple of guys yelling and stuff, looking for people who could hear them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, all of a sudden it's like, oh, this guy can hear us over here, and he started talking to me, and that scared me. And I just said, I'm out of here. You know, so what was that? Was I going into some, like, past life regression automatically, or what?
No, I think what it is, do you remember in Ghosts, the Academy Award-winning movie Ghosts?
Yes, sir.
When Patrick Swayze was searching around for someone that could hear him, and then he stumbled upon Whoopi.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine if you were suddenly thrusted into that state or died and you found yourself still fully conscious and still in some kind of body, but the only thing is the people who were still in the physical body couldn't hear you? And wouldn't you search around for someone to be able to link, or if you were really obsessed with the physical plane, you would search around for someone to hear you, to validate that you are still real. And if that person did hear you, I think you'd be around them all the time, just trying to communicate with them.
It just scared the hell out of me, and I was like, no,
it scared me too. It scared me so bad that I stayed up all night long afraid to go back to sleep. I totally understand.
It happens to me a lot because I'm a driver, and I don't know if it's like if I sleep on my steering wheel, you know, a little bit head over there and it vibrates. I don't know if that does anything. But,
well, it scares the hell out of us little four-wheelers.
No, I stop. I don't know if it has something to do with the vibration of the truck, but it happens a lot when I'm, like, taking a little nap.
Yeah.
You know, and I start going through the vibration thing, and you
that's
know,
right.
Well, you just
my
have
eyes
to keep
will be open. I can look at my feet, and it's like, well, I don't think I really want to do this while I'm sitting in the truck.
Right.
You said the key word. I mean, you said the key phrase: a little nap. It's a little piece of time to sleep, and that's when it usually happens. When we sleep 8 hours very heavily, we generally don't remember anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the only place you and I differ, as you well know.
Mm-hmm.
What about the 18-wheeler that suddenly veers off the road and there's a head-on collision? Now, maybe sometimes it's a little nap, and maybe sometimes it's a little more than a nap. And, you know, while I know that you say that all of this is safe,
mm-hmm.
I'm not utterly convinced, having talked to some people who have had bad experiences.
Right.
And knowing that a lot of people die in their sleep. It's the old one I hit you with every time.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that occasionally trucks do veer off the road, and it wasn't a little nap, it's the big nap. I don't know how you can be so sure that it's so safe.
Oh, well, the only, you know, it's
this is what I can say, and it's still consistent to this day after all this time of actually once I found out what it was. The only time I have had negative experiences was in the beginning when I didn't know what this was and I had a lot of fearful thoughts. To this day, and it's been quite a while since you and I have been speaking.
It has,
I think
yes.
This is like our 10th show or something like that. To this day, I do not have negative experiences. I would think I would have one or two to spice up my life or my projections, but I haven't had any. They're all wonderful experiences that hinge on my past experiences. So my knowledge and experiences are taking me somewhere. They're linear. It's an understanding that is becoming more and more apparent. So if I had any, I would share. Now,
do you
I'm
have
not
any sense
you
of,
can't have any bad
no,
experiences.
No, I know. I understand. Do you have any sense of where it's going for you? In other words, is this an evolution that's headed to some place for you?
Well, I think, I like to think that this is all about total self-realization. Total. 100%. There are some people who are born in this time period and have been born in the past that I'd like to use the phrase they were turned on. They were on. They were not switched off to the non-physical. I think this whole thing for me, and which is definitely happening to this day, is that I'm slowly turning on. It's not like a light switch. It's more of a rheostat, and it's getting brighter and brighter. And with that knowledge, I'm able to do things that I never dreamed possible.
All right, hold it right there.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. To Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 3rd of September, 1999.
It is exactly that, and you never know what this program is going to be. It's kind of a cross between science and science fiction, and I don't know what it is. But I do know this. We vacillate between having hard scientists on the air and people who take, well, the kind of approach that Albert's taking right now. And he's been in both. And as I listen to these hard scientists, the physicists, the mathematicians, the astronomers, and I listen to the metaphysics-type folks, I'm still not sure today where the answer is. I'm really not. Are you? I sit here and I read articles about people building machines, which, by the way, are almost done, which will attempt to duplicate the Big Bang. Literally, could cause a Big Bang, a black hole, could cause the Earth to wink out, boom, like that. So where are the final answers? I don't know. I don't really know. Do you? Back, Albert.
Thank you.
You know, I was just sort of ruminating there at the bottom of the hour. I've got this story in front of me, which I'm holding up for the audience. They can see it on my webcam. It's entitled, it's from London, and it's entitled, Big Bang Machine Could Destroy Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And they are designing this machine now, which they think can literally recreate the Big Bang,
mm-hmm.
or may create a black hole,
mm-hmm.
or it may just totally destroy us. And they're going ahead with this. Now, they're studying it and worrying about it, but inevitably they're going ahead with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I say I have hard scientists on the air, and then I have people who have more metaphysical answers, and I haven't made my own mind up yet fully, Albert, where the answers are,
mm-hmm.
or where the disasters might be. For the human race.
Yeah, you know, science, I believe curiosity and research are all so important, but I think we should have
some kind of restraint so that we don't end up being like children playing with a loaded gun. You know, end up opening a can of worms where we can't put it back in the can. I read an interesting book a while back about a scientist creating a microscopic or a small, minute black hole.
That's right.
And this black hole was independent of the gravitational pull of Earth, and it would actually go through everything, and eventually, as it would go through Earth and come back around and go through Earth again, it was collecting more and more density and more mass.
That's right.
And it was almost impossible to stop. The Big Bang, I'm not sure, you know.
You know, I read that same book.
Did you? It was a fascinating book, wasn't it?
It was. Oh, absolutely fascinating.
Excellent.
Yeah, they're miniature black holes.
Right, right. And it was killing people and going through houses and
yep.
You name it.
Yep.
That kind of thing, you know, if we have to know our limitations. I think we have to be very cautious when we're exploring new ground, new technologies, and trying to duplicate what's already out there that nature or God or whatever you want to say has created. We have to be cautious. You know, we're open-minded but cautious.
They'll push the button, though. I guarantee it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I hope that we can, whatever we do to find out things, are things that we can put back in the can if they don't seem to be working out.
The sub-headline says, and it shows a little picture, it says, ready for blast-off. A Brookhaven engineer puts finishing touches to the ion collider.
Hmm. Wow.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hi.
Hi. I have a question and a comment.
All right.
Okay, my question concerns the vibrational state that people describe at the beginning of an out-of-body experience.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that that can feel like being violently tossed to the left and right, even though you're aware that your body isn't physically moving?
Oh, that's a little different. What that is, in a lot of cases, is that's the astral body rocking, trying to get free. Oh. You've gone past the vibrational state.
Because
that's actual, like, borderline disconnection.
That's the state I usually seem to start in. I never feel a paralysis, or I never hear any sounds or anything. It just, that's the part that I always notice.
Right. Well, that's okay, because, see, the faster you go through the disconnection process, the fewer things you're going to feel. The faster you go, you're not going to feel the vibration. You're not going to feel the paralysis. You may get right to the rocking or the feeling as if your body is swaying back and forth or even rolling or trying to dislodge of some sort. So, but that's okay. It's the faster, the better. That way there's not so much discomfort.
Oh, okay. And my comment was, have either of you ever seen the movie Eden? It's from 1997.
Eden. Tell me a little bit about it. Was that about
me too?
Vietnamese woman in reincarnation.
Yes, Joanna Goeing, the actress. It's set in the mid 1960s. She suffers from multiple sclerosis, and she starts astral projecting.
Oh no, I don't believe I've seen that one.
Oh, it's a very touching movie. If you ever get a chance, I think you'd find it.
It's on my list. It's on my list. Anything involving astral projection or out of body experiences is on my list. It's called Eden.
Yes,
I would definitely check it out.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you very much.
You.
Take care. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey, Jen.
Okay, you're going to have to yell at us.
Oh, I'm going to have to yell?
Yeah.
I've got a sleeping house, of course.
That's better. Go ahead.
I have a couple of things. Okay, I experienced a lot of astral travel when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in my mid-30s now, and once I came to know what it was...
Mm-hmm.
It seemed that, and stopped being afraid of it.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of stopped.
Mm.
Or, that loud hum
mm-hmm.
became the soft buzz.
Mm.
It just became a dull hum.
Mm-hmm.
And since I was about 16, I'm 34 now, since I was about 16, I've only had two experiences that I remember. One was sleeping, and I went to Australia for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And woke up 6 hours later, didn't know why I didn't have a tan.
Mm-hmm.
And then after my grandfather passed away, I had a visitation from him.
Mm. Excellent.
Which was about a year ago. We had martinis together. Well, he taught me how to drink martinis. And I told my mom about it because he gave her a massage in the visitation.
Fascinating.
Which comforted her, but it seems that... I don't know if I'm just not remembering.
Well,
because I'm so comfortable with it now that I know what it is.
You said it stopped happening. Now, I assume it was happening on its own without you attempting it, trying to make it happen.
I used to have that severe fear.
Right.
When I was, like, on the ceiling trying to reenter.
Right. So, and you didn't...
And I could feel myself trying to fight it when I would be leaving,
mm-hmm.
when I was about 15.
Were you trying to have an out-of-body experience, or did it just happen?
That was when I was younger.
Uh-huh.
And then once I found out what it was and realized it was nothing to be afraid of...
It's decreased and stopped.
Yes, or it's just not affecting me the way it was.
Well, I don't know. It sounds like it was just happening to you without you trying, and you experimented when it was available or when it presented itself to you. But if you become proactive about it and try to make it happen and read some of the techniques that I've written in my book and in other books, if you've done it once, you can do it again. If you can do it once, you can do it many, many, many times.
Yeah, I did it many times when I was very young.
Right. Well, you're still that same spiritual being or that same soul.
Yeah, of course.
You still have those capabilities, and you can have other experiences.
Of course. I just, you know, it seems that I just don't remember it.
That's okay.
And I have a question for you, Art.
Sure.
William Cooper.
Yes.
Is he around still?
I don't know.
You don't know?
Nope.
Oh, okay. It just seemed that you guys were on kind of a similar level on certain things.
I don't think so.
Oh.
He thinks I'm the devil's toe jam. He thinks I'm the heralder of the New World Order.
I thought I was.
What? I am.
That's what I've been told I was.
No, that's
I am.
That's what he's written about.
The heralder of the New World Order.
So I don't keep track of him.
Oh, no.
When I take over, it's all over for him. So.
Oh, you're taking over? Okay, I'm glad I know who to call.
I got to go. Thanks.
Thank you.
See
you.
Wild card line, you're with Albert Taylor. Hi.
All three of you are wrong. I'm the master of the New World.
Okay, well then.
Okay, I'm sorry. Anyway, Albert, I'm 41 years old.
Uh-huh.
I've been having these experiences since I was just a little kid.
Uh-huh.
What I've noticed lately or whatever, that this plane doesn't seem to be the be-all and end-all that some people think it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like the pinnacle of spiritual experience. As a matter of fact, it's seems that there's an emptiness about it, and I'm not trying to push an agenda. I have a question for Art, if I could. I'm not trying to push an agenda, but when you become lucid, or when I become lucid to where I am,
mm-hmm.
in this plane, and if my thoughts or my mouth says Jesus Christ or something, that's not very well accepted on that plane. Am I missing something here, or as an experiment? Have you ever mentioned his name on that plane and saw the reaction? Because it's really not that pleasant.
Well, no, I haven't mentioned it, but
mm-hmm.
having done a lot of reconnaissance missions, I call them.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
What I found out, and I've said this before,
okay.
is that there are a lot of religious beliefs that are only on the lower areas of the astral plane or that next level,
uh-huh.
A lot of those religious beliefs do not exist in the higher realms of consciousness.
In other words, they, as you ascend, they fade
yes.
slowly.
Yes.
Hey, Art.
Yes.
On August, you know, between August 11th and August 18th, you know, we have the last solar eclipse of the millennium, and then we have the...
August 11th, yes.
Right, and then we have the great grand... cross on August 18th, plus the Cassini.
Right.
Space. Are you planning on having any guests to address that, maybe Hoagland or someone like that? How, you know, in this 1 week we have all these things coming together?
I'll see what I can put together.
I love it. Thank you very much, sir.
All right.
Take care.
It is a hell of a year, Albert.
Mm-hmm.
That we're going through right now.
To the new millennium.
It's going to be a really wild time between now and the very end of the year.
Definitely.
A lot of things are going to be going on.
Definitely. Caller's
absolutely right about that.
We're getting ready to make a shift, I think, to finally start accomplishing things.
I know. I can feel it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hi.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
And I am from New York, and we do know about Brookhaven Labs. It's quite a place.
Well, look, if they are successful... It won't make any difference whether you're in New York or whether you're out here in the desert, the way I'm reading it.
Well, we'll have our out-of-body experience.
Yeah, everybody will.
Everybody will.
Yeah, that'll answer the questions. It's amazing that the last hour you really touched upon some very important things, and I think I'd like to get back into the, you know, raising your vibration and learning how to meditate, and that's a very good way of a good approach.
Mm-hmm.
You just might bypass a lot of the astral, you know, adventures that people sometimes have, and it's not some negative thing, but it's just where they live, you know, it's just there. I guess it's necessary. And it is. But I wanted to bring back a point that people who do travel out of the body, and there's different ways of traveling. And you mentioned astral projection.
Mm-hmm.
And you also mentioned soul travel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you were trying to make a distinction between them.
No,
or at least
I
there might be different levels of...
different levels,
body.
Yes.
Different
but
levels, yeah, but not between those two. I say those two things are the same.
Okay, and of course there's mental travel too.
Right, well, that's a different vibrational level.
Mm-hmm. I do want you to kind of like talk a little bit about how you can raise your vibration so you can avoid many of the negative things, because sometimes people do experience. I would like to talk about one experience very quickly. It'll take a minute.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning when I tried to move out of the body, this was in 73, and I was living with a young lady, and I was out of the body. She went to the bathroom. When she came back, she saw me in two places at the same time, in bed and, you know, out of the body. And she saw that. And I did concur. I did have the experience of seeing her trying to communicate, to tell her not to scream.
Wow.
She did not get my communication. She did scream quite loudly.
Uh-huh.
So that was a validation from someone from external, you know, who wasn't...
You know what? I have never heard that before.
Albert, I know you probably heard of cases like that where people
yes,
external.
I have.
Yeah,
well,
Albert.
Those same people
has.
Are able to see spirits, though. Also.
If
you can see the astral form, you can see ghosts and have other talents too.
Well, she was definitely not looking for this.
Mm-hmm.
But she found
it. That's generally how it happens. Most of us aren't looking for it. It kind of leaps up and surprises us.
That would do it. I got to tell you, folks, that would do it for me. If I thought I was having an OBE. And my wife said, "Oh my God!" and screamed, "I see you in two places." That'd probably stop my heart.
That would add a different level of realism.
Yes, it would.
Well, it also got me into a little difficulty because I was stuck in the body. I couldn't move the body, like you say, the paralysis.
Right.
And I guess you might have seen me stiff as a board there too. So I mean, that must have added to the drama quite a bit. It sure added to my drama trying to move, and I couldn't.
Well. Let me share this with you real quick, because there's probably a lot of people out there who have the paralysis and they're not looking to have an out-of-body experience. They just want to end the paralysis and maybe come out of it.
Right.
So if you are, the big thing that I found is that most of us are trying to move the entire body and reconnect with the entire body, and it's very difficult and maybe even frightening because we can't make it happen right away. But instead of trying to move the entire body and jump back in and sit up or something like that, just think about moving a small portion of your body, maybe the little finger or your toe or something like that. Because what happens is once you're able to move one of those, it's kind of just dominoes, and eventually you're reconnected and you can move the physical body again.
Either that or think immediately of the IRS.
No, I think you just move your accounts on that one. Well, at least it's a bigger body. Of your account.
Yeah.
I did once had a paralysis, but that was under a different situation, and I did move a finger and I called for help.
Uh-huh.
Break loose and it worked.
Uh-huh.
But that was a different type of paralysis that people get when they're before they're abducted. And there might be a correlation between that and moving the astral body out and kind of having an astral...
That's also a very, very interesting observation. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think they are related.
In other words, you would be most vulnerable for abduction.
Well, maybe you can perceive it as abduction, but maybe it's not really abduction. Maybe it's something else.
Well, I wonder how many people perceive OBEs as abductions.
Right. That's what I wonder also.
Without knowing better, why wouldn't you?
Exactly. If there's something non-physical, especially when I found out that if you think it's an alien, you're going to see that whether it is or not. So, and if it's a guide or something, or an angel, or whatever you want to call it, that's trying to take you somewhere, and you're perceiving it a little bit differently, of course you're going to think you're being abducted.
If you're a Catholic, you might perceive it to be a saint.
You just might, or an angel with wings.
That's it. All right. Very quickly, west of the Rockies, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hi.
Yes, hi, Art.
Yes, sir.
Hi, I sent you an email about 2 weeks ago asking you to if you could find somebody about OBEs. Did you get that?
Well, here he is.
Yeah. I've read all three of Robert Munro's books, and I've been trying for quite some time to get have an OBE, and I have been unable to.
Mm-hmm.
Have you found that there's some people that just can't...
Can't do it?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there's going to be a percentage of people who haven't had the experience as of yet, but I always say you can't do it when you die. When you're dead, then you haven't been able to do it in that lifetime. There's always hope as long as you're breathing.
Okay, so just keep trying.
Keep plugging on. And try to lower your expectations and just kind of let it happen.
Okay.
All right. There is probably such a thing as trying too hard.
Yes, huh? Definitely. 100% there is something that, of that nature.
Because it sure happened to me when I was not expecting it, nor soliciting it, or wanting it, or even thinking
about it. Well, the key is surrender and release. Don't try to control it. Surrender, and it will happen naturally.
All right. Again, we've done it, Albert. Again, if folks, if you would like the book, Soul Traveler, by Albert Taylor, we now have an 800 number, which we didn't before.
Mm-hmm.
It's 1-800-908-9922.
That's it.
And Albert, we'll have you back again, of course.
Art, it has been a pleasure.
It always is.
And,
Albert,
and
thank
give
you.
My regards to Ramona, and I will be talking to you later.
Good night, Albert. Good night, my friend.
Good night.
That's Albert Taylor. All right, folks. Onward we go, and we'll be back tomorrow night, and we'll try to get inside the mind of a killer. Not such a pleasant place to be, but if you want to understand some of the tragedies that occur in our lives, maybe it's not such a bad idea. Anyway, we'll give it a try. Night all.